Presidential Rank Awards returned this year after a one-year hiatus. The awards honor the top 1% of senior federal career managers and the important work federal employees do every day. Among this year's winners was Dr. Richard Linderman, the Chief Scientist of the Information Directorate at the Air Force's Rome Research Laboratory. He joins me now with more on his award and on the program. Dr. Linderman, great to have you on.
Thanks, Tom. Great to be with you this morning.
All right, so you came up with an idea of using PS3 gaming consoles. Tell us what you did with those and how it came out.
That is one that often captures the imagination of people. What we really wanted to get at was a great microprocessor chip, the Cell Broadband Engine that IBM and Toshiba and Sony had collaborated on and put inside those PS3s. And we noticed that this chip had tremendous ability to do high-performance computing at a very low power. And those attributes were great building blocks for supercomputers. So we considered just getting at the chips and putting them on conventional boards and server racks to form a supercomputer. But that really was orders of magnitude more expensive, you know, by taking advantage of the gaming market, which is in many people's living rooms and sold at a much higher commodity marketplace. We were really able to drive down the price and improve the time to delivery. Actually, after we bought about 2,000 of those PlayStation 3s, the truck backed up within just a couple of weeks and dropped them all off.
You said 2,000 of them? I'm sorry, you said 2,000 of them?
No, 2,000.
2,000, yeah, okay.
So this made about a supercomputer that was about what they call a half a petaflop, or 500 teraflops. It was, at that time, this is back around 2010, 2011, the government, or the Air Force's largest supercomputer by that measure. Now, there were some limitations that came along with how we internetworked these PlayStations, but in the end, they were quite effective at accelerating our research and development.
Well, half a petaflop is not bad, even if you have another supercomputer nearby. And what was the purpose to which you were applying this half a petaflop's worth of game consoles?
Well, there were kind of two, one a little more pragmatic and one pretty farther out there. The more pragmatic one was trying to produce imagery, radar imagery over large swaths of land at high resolution. And that job would require a couple hundred teraflops to do in real time, keeping up with the sensor. So that was one that people knew was of military relevance and fairly easy to grasp that way. But the other one, which was driven more from some of our basic research efforts, was to have computers available that could really speed up research into large-scale neuromorphic computing architectures. Because, you know, there are several research endeavors where we're coming close to very interesting scale of problems that we can solve on supercomputers and deliver intelligence that begins to rival human-level intelligence. So, for example, the ability of humans to fill in gaps in information is one of those things. To demonstrate that, while IBM was playing Jeopardy, we use this computer to play Wheel of Fortune, you know, which is a game where only partial information is revealed, and you should be able to try to fill in the missing bits of information. That's a general human cognitive capability that we'd very much like to replicate. So some of that more basic research we were pursuing on the computer.
We're speaking with Dr. Richard Linderman, the Chief Scientist of the Information Directorate at the Air Force's Rome Research Laboratory and a Presidential Rank Award winner. And so all this harnessing of basically toys into something really useful got you a Presidential Rank Award, and it must have felt good to get that award, especially after they seem to have been suspended for a year.
Well, it did indeed. You know, I think these awards are very significant to everybody who receives them. I think that you have to remember that behind every one of us, though, there's a big team of people who are contributing to push advances, you know, in science and technology in my case. And that was certainly the case here. But it was wonderful to see them restored this year. I know it was difficult, you know, going through 2013 with sequestration and all the budgetary constrictions. So great to see that we've moved beyond that and get back can get back to this program, which I think is very significant.
Now, I imagine some of the younger airmen and researchers and scientists that you have on the staff were probably pretty impressed to see something that they might use in their own lives. You may not. I know I don't use game consoles. Never have. I don't even know what they look like. But they must have said, hey, dude, this is a pretty good way to use them.
There was a lot of buzz about this in the press because it was kind of unusual. You know, I mean, machines of this size would usually cost about $25 million or so. I think when the DOE bought a couple of years before that, using the same chip was probably over $100 million. But by leveraging what everybody could buy for their living room, this one came in at under $2 million, and the PlayStation part of it really only cost $300,000. So that kind of gives you a sense of the power of leveraging the commercial marketplace.
And did you have to take the innards out of the PlayStations, or could you just wire them together as they are?
You know, we thought about that, you know, because I think there's a natural proclivity to want to do that and kind of make it your own. But once we got in there, we saw it was so well packaged that that wasn't really a good idea. For example, one of the problems you always have with supercomputers is keeping the things cool and providing the amperage to them. But they'd done such a great job of airflow within the console itself that that we just decided to keep them as they were and mount them on bread racks, actually, which was kind of made them look like the point we were trying to make, that you could do these things very inexpensively by leveraging the commercial market.
But what about the interconnection bus? Could you, I guess they have an Ethernet port on them, but was that sufficient to get, I guess it was, but how did you get the throughput from machine to machine for supercomputing levels of speed?
And that is one of the primary differences that should be pointed out between some of these much more expensive supercomputers that were using the same chip, where they might have 10 gigabit or 40 gigabit per second interconnectivity. And the PlayStations have 1 gigabit per second connectivity. So you can leverage the tremendous price and the great power efficiency and the very high performance. But if you've got jobs which need to have a lot of intercommunications going on between the computing nodes, then you might run into bandwidth limitations going between. Anyhow, they had a 1 gigabit link, and the two problems I mentioned, plus several others, had no problem with that. So it really just depends on the nature of the particular problem you're trying to solve and how well it parallelizes across thousands of computing nodes.
And do you think now that having demonstrated what is possible with these machines, that you can convince the developers of the chip itself that maybe there's a different market here, and then they could bring offer that chip in a board in such a way that this type of computer would not be so expensive relative
to... You bet. You know, often not mentioned because people tend to focus on the PS3s is that the other half of the computing horsepower came from general-purpose graphical processing units, things like what NVIDIA Corporation makes. And those graphics accelerators that a lot of people put into their PCs are also very powerful and deliberately dual-use capabilities now, so that they can do scientific computing on the one hand, or, you know, their primary function of accelerating graphics production on your screen most of the day long.
And just
so I think industry has gotten that idea that they can address both of these markets simultaneously.
I think in the moment we have left, the Rome Research Lab is a storied place, but not everybody in the federal government has heard of it. Just give us the 1 minute version of what happens at the Rome Lab in general.
We focus on the information and the cyber science and technology development for the department. You know, those things are of increasing importance, just like the last interview we're having. Many of us, you know, have got mounting concerns in cyberspace. I lead the DOD's cyber science and technology community, trying to come up with new ideas for how we can, you know, change this game, which I'm not sure any of us are satisfied with how it's being played presently. But there are lots of good ideas where we can come with architectures that have greater resilience and greater agility and really help us secure our information and assure our missions in cyberspace. So we do a lot of work in that area, and it's been a growth business. You know, we do about, I guess 5 years ago, about $700 million. It's grown to a little over $1 billion a year now, up here in Rome, focusing on technologies for cyber and C4I, you know, command, control, communications, and intelligence.
All right. Sounds like money well spent. Dr. Richard Linderman is the chief scientist of the Information Directorate in the Air Force's Research Laboratory. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling.